the time, are the records correct when in the records that BDS has? And so there might be some way to fix the system, because if the house is remodeled in 1970 and then it gets completely remodeled, then there's a lot of intricacies there. So that was one concern. Which historic designation would be used? Because we all know that the HRI is pretty much useless right now. But the good news is that BPS hired a historic planner, and we'll hopefully be able to move forward on that. And I wasn't going to name names, but I think we all know. The increased cost to deconstruction varies widely with who you ask. I heard Travis say that it was cost neutral. I've heard that it's $9,000 to $10,000, and a lot depends on what has to be done. With excavation is a big issue, because when they deconstruct and there's a basement, part of the deconstruction does not include the excavation, so then whoever's doing the building has to then hire someone to do that added excavation. So there was a concern of how that cost would be covered, and most people are pointing, saying, well, the developer or the landowner should pay for that, but that is only going to trickle downhill or uphill to the next buyer for affordable housing. So how that is tackled, I think, needs to be a very important piece of this to make it successful. I've been at a couple neighborhood meetings where there's been some good suggestions about incentives, so that if you most of your waste is just construction waste, and that you get credit for what you deconstructed and didn't bring to the landfill, and that there are lesser fees for those people that are doing deconstruction, that the costs somehow be shared, that this is a and one of the DRAC members brought up, Herman Kolas brought this up. He said, why should I support an emerging industry? Why should I pay $9,000 more for an industry that's now emerging? And can we find a way to help with the training, help with the cost, to get those things more in line with what a mechanical demolition would essentially accomplish, but not in a way that some people would like? If someone chooses deconstruction, is there a way to lower fees? Is there a way to offer them an incentive, much like we do when we buy a refrigerator that's energy assistance, you get some sort of thing? And so I think there's those kind of options that have not been put into this. A feasibility study. Everybody says we can handle it, we can do it, but we've not seen cold, hard numbers, and so would that happen? There was a concern that there was only three full-time deconstruction companies in Portland, and that we would add to that burden, and I've heard today that they say they can take it on, so I don't know who's going to decide that, but that would be a concern. And does less material to the landfill have unintended consequences? Are we going to put somebody out of business because they aren't hauling things to the landfill and we're taking 40% of waste away? What's going to happen to those people that were doing that? I know it's a kind of a social kinds of issue, but will those people transform into another, and can that be part of the issue? And then how would this be administered? Inspection cost, enforcement cost, all of those kinds of things need to be explored before, as Barbara mentioned, the complaint. Everything's complaint-driven. So I complain that I didn't like the way they did the deconstruction. What is a deconstruction? So that needs to be clearly defined. So going forward, I think I've been asked the question several times, would DRAC support this proposal? And I think they would, with a lot of additions. And I can't speak because we have such a wide, varied, but those were their concerns with what they heard at the January meeting. I think the number one thing is a clear definition of deconstruction needs to be on the table, that there needs to be more community input. Barbara and I are not representative of the entire city. There was no outreach done to land use groups, neighborhood coalition chairs and directors meetings to get their feedback. I brought it up at a South Tabor Neighborhood Association meeting, and a guy brought up the idea about incentives for dumping costs. I think there needs to be more of that, because I think there's a lot of wisdom in our neighborhoods, and I think we need to involve them more in the conversation, because they're the ones that are being most affected. I also think that there needs to be state regulatory people, because I could go on forever about hazmat control, asbestos, lead, who enforces, who does what. I really like your idea of the third option, but of let's just do it. But as current history daily today is going on about state regulation of different things, as well as what I witnessed when part of the demolition delay ordinance tried to get everybody in the room about lead and asbestos. There were 11 different bureaus and state agencies that came to that meeting that all had different pieces. None of them were talking to each other. They all kind of had some familiarity. So it's a big task, but I think that hearing this today, I think that the city could take a lead and say, we want to fix this. We want to make it be better, and this is how we get those people in the room. We've already met 2 or 3 times. Might be a good opportunity to bring those people back to the table, OSHA and OHA and Multnomah County and the lead line, and I could go on and on. I think there needs to be a clearly defined process for permitting and inspection and enforcement, because otherwise you're just going to have a lot of people saying, and no offense to all the colleagues of people that do this, but a lot of people are going to become deconstructors, and if there's no guidelines, then what happens?
Mary Helen, I just want to stop you there for 1 second. Are some of these questions you're raising the kind of questions that can be addressed through the rulemaking process?
Right, or code. Yeah.
Code, because I'm trying to figure out where it's...
I think they need to be specifically requested that these questions be answered.
Well, I think they're all... Yeah, I'm making a list, and they're very thoughtful questions, but they could, in fact, be addressed... Many of these could be addressed through the code, right? The
right.
Definitions, the...
But I think if we set a timeline of October 2016, I don't think you should set a date. I mean, well, you can't, either way. I think we need to answer these questions before we implement this program.
Well, one of the questions that I would have is does the mayor intend to bring back the proposed code language to council, in which case would we
have
that?
Of course, yes.
So if yeah.
That's the only way to get it to be code.
Sure. No, so, I understand that.
Well, there's some stuff I think we can delegate, but if the intention is to bring code back, then that would be at least an insurance policy on some of the things that you're raising. And we could also request a certain level of outreach between now and then to get these voices.
Okay. I agree, but I think the concern was that there wasn't a lot of neighborhood input other than Barbara's voice and me being out there in the land use world. But I think we need to have public forums, tell people what it is and how that needs to be a piece. So those are I address the concerns of DRAC about the equity and the funding and how it would affect affordable housing that comes after. That was a big one. And then the question of who really pays. You know, if we're paying, if it is the difference between 9,000 and 1,000 is $5,000. How is that $5,000 going to be absorbed into the process, and why not share that cost with the industry, with an incentive, with some other, because right now it's focused, laser focused on the development industry, and I think that they can surely be a participant in the process, but I think it's all it's going to do is add to the cost of affordable housing, and there's other ways to get at that, incentivizing people to do deconstruction. So
great.
I think that's...
Thank you very much. So questions for this panel? Thank you all very much. So let's turn to public testimony, and folks, come on up. And again, obviously we have a great deal of information already, so if what you've already heard answers your concerns, feel free to be brief.
We have 21 people signed up.
Okay.
The first three, please, coming up are Terry Parker, Jim Brown, and John Sandy. And they'll be followed by Al Ellis, Margaret Davis, and Scott Yelton.
Thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Terry Parker. I'm a fourth generation Portlander, and today I'm speaking as a member of the steering committee of UNR. For a city that prides itself promoting reuse and recycling, why does this resolution still allow single-family homes built after 1960 to be mechanically demolished with reusable materials literally being crushed using a diesel smoke belching excavator? The delay in fully implementing a deconstruction mandate appears to be a development community claptrap fabrication that suggests the deconstruction and reusing building materials industry will fall short. The preservation of existing homes needs to be top priority. However, when a home is slated for removal, the sustainability and preservation tools are found within the deconstruction toolbox. The reuse of building materials lessens the need for new raw materials, including new lumber from growing trees, while preserving historical artifacts such as period window frames, interior moldings and trim, and other materials of character that otherwise could not be replaced. The marketplace for these products currently has an unmet demand for both restoration and repair work and for repurposing uses. There is also a need for more livable wage jobs within the community. As compared to mechanical demolition, deconstruction can create significantly more jobs, including entry-level jobs that can lead to higher-paying jobs. With a truck, some tools, the proper training, and the will to work hard, deconstruction supports the creation of numerous small family and minority businesses that in theory could even dominate the local deconstruction industry. In the 1920s, Portland was in the midst of a new home building boom. These homes are of high quality construction built with old growth lumber. Extending and amending the deconstruction mandate to include homes built in the years from 1917 to 1930 cannot come soon enough. It is a crime not to preserve the irreplaceable lumber and reuse the materials from these homes. Instead of accepting delay and waiting a year or two after an effective date of October 16 to take the next step, a fast-paced track to full implementation of the deconstruction mandate should be viewed as an opportunity to both create new jobs and add even more vibrancy to an already thriving reuse marketplace. The City Council needs to pass this resolution and take the Field of Dreams approach, require deconstruction, promote the reuse of deconstruction materials, assist in early training, and then watch the industry soar to new heights. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
I'm Jim Brown. Address for the last 36 years is 3407 Northeast 27th. I've lived in the Grant High School area for about 70 years. I recently retired from 5 years as Land Use Committee Chairman for Alameda Neighborhood Association. Our most frequent contacts from homeowners concerned destruction of livable homes and construction of new homes that appear out of character for the neighborhood. That said, certainly demolition of a perfectly good house is a waste. What is worse, the waste is compounded by the current practice of smashing and trashing. Homes built in the 1920s, and even some up to the 1950s, contain old-growth Douglas fir lumber. Deconstruction yields wood of a quality that is not available from today's commercial forests. This old wood is denser and stronger, has a higher resin content, and is more durable. Present-day lumber comes from trees that are farmed, managed to grow quickly, and often harvested at an age of as little as 40 years. Today's lumber is adequate to meet current structural standards, but is not fine-grained. Large old-growth posts and beams from deconstruction are resurfaced and reused for structural purposes, often left exposed for their unique appearance. Smaller lumber is reused, remilled, and/or repurposed by local small businesses to manufacture furniture, moldings, and cabinets. I am told the market for products made from this wood is strong and growing as customers learn of the unique quality and look of old-growth wood. I urge the Council to develop regulations that will encourage and increase the use of this resource. The minimum date of 1916 should be ramped up as deconstruction capacity grows. Perhaps a few more trees will remain growing in our forests.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
John Sandy. I'm a resident of Northeast Portland. And a couple of personal things that I've been involved with this discussion today. One, I recently built a dining room table with materials from the rebuilding center that can sit my 12 members of my extended family. And I recently had a home that was torn down right behind me, and it was deconstructed, and myself and my neighbors slept much more peacefully knowing that it was deconstructed. My emphasis talking today is on the hazardous materials. Back in December 2014, as part of a UNR, I focused on that and brought up a couple studies talking about the HUD studies that talked about the spread of the lead dust from sites up to 300 feet and concentrations above that. So that started these studies, and I referred to these studies in my talk. And please, that sparked my passion for the hazardous materials focus that I've given on this subject for the last 15 months or so. what has occurred, and well, the highlights of that, two things. One, those studies said proper wedding, two simple things, biggest thing, proper wedding and partial deconstruction of the high lead concentrated windows trim and that were the biggest factors to reduce that spread into the nearby lots. Those two factors. We're talking about one of those today. What has occurred since December 2014? One, the Bureau of Development Services has instituted the self-certification by contractors to follow the rules. Unfortunately, that show has been shown to be woefully ineffective, with recent data from the DEQ as analyzed by the Oregonian showing 65% non-conformance levels when you're talking about asbestos abatement and demolitions in Portland. 65%. Obviously, the honor system is not working too well. What else has occurred? Citizens have promoted through the legislation SB 705, which is the asbestos survey for single-family houses. UNR and activists are working with the DEQ to put some teeth into this. Right now, as we talked about earlier, they can request this. We would like to see verification. We need verification. This should be surveys, and the should be available before a permit is issued, as we started to talk about what can we do. So after 15 months of knowing the potential risk to public health, and this brings up some of the other things that were said earlier, nothing concrete has been done to mitigate the risk. It's 15 months. With the recent national and local issues around it, I would hope the City Council would take that to heart and institute simple, urgent requirements. Full deconstruction is the surest way, but at the very minimum, partial deconstruction coupled with proper abatement and adequate debris wetting should be verified with on-site inspections. So to fill the gap between the economics capacity to create full deconstruction, we should at least take this intermediate step of partial deconstruction and such. So I think most of the other things have been covered, so thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you all. Thank you very much.
In my written comments, I failed to mention I am serving on the UNR Steering Committee.
Okay, thank you.
Next three are Al Ellis, Margaret Davis, and Scott Yelton, and they'll be followed by Doug Lichtor, Preston Browning, and David Benick.
Come on up. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, my name's Al Ellis, and I'm one of those elders that fills up my retirement time with volunteer work, and I'm involved in three organizations. One is the Portland Kabato Sister City Association. I'm president of that Sister City Association, but we're not here to talk about the Russian Far East. We're here to talk about the welfare of our neighborhoods here in Portland. The other two organizations are neighborhood organizations. One is the Beaumont-Wilshire Neighborhood Association. I used to be president of that. Now I'm editor of the newsletter. And the other is the organization, the grassroots organization that I co-founded a few years ago, UNR, the United Neighborhoods for Reform. I serve as UNR's representative on DRAC's demolition subcommittee. So you heard from the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability that there's been an average of 300 Portland homes demolished the past 2 years. And whether this constitutes a demolition epidemic is up for debate. But there's no denying that many viable, contextually compatible homes have fallen victim to this wave of destruction, with Portland residents bearing the resultant environmental costs. BPS concludes that, quote, demolition of housing has raised community concerns about housing affordability, health, waste, and neighborhood character. And I was at a RIPSAC meeting a few weeks ago, the infill reform committee that the mayor has initiated. And the mayor spoke to this committee, and he basically said that these concerns that I just mentioned are comprise his Hippocratic Oath, really, to do something about these things. And it's these very concerns that gave rise to UNR. It's been endorsed by 43 neighborhood associations, and with a shared tenet that destroying the village in order to save it is never, you know, the wise policy. A central plank of our resolution, our demolition development resolution, deals with environmental fallout from demolitions. And it's a logical extension that deconstruction is the way to go. The proposed legislation before you today is a step forward in addressing the impacts associated with waste generated by demolitions, and hopefully the beginning of a path that will fulfill our UNR's ultimate objective, which would be mandated deconstruction for all residential demolitions. So I think there's a sense of urgency here. Just as there's a sense of urgency on the global warming front, there's a sense of urgency in Southeast Portland, there should be a sense of urgency on this issue. And I encourage you to expand to 1930 at least, to cover homes that were built at that point, because right now, 1916 leaves out so many homes that were destroyed and will be destroyed. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hi, I'm Margaret Davis. I work with United Neighborhoods for Reform, and I also live in Northeast Portland. I'm betting that most of you up there recycle. I'm betting that most of us here recycle. We do it because it's the right thing to do. And nobody pays us to take that extra effort to go over and put our recyclables in the special recycling bin and schlep that down the driveway. We recycle because it's the right thing to do. And we can recycle whole houses because it's the right thing to do. I've handed out a Metro report that was published in December. And for the first time in nearly a decade, we've registered a decline in our recovery rate, and that is the materials not going to the landfill. Two of the three materials that were part of that decline are wood and scrap metal. And those two materials are attributed to the construction industry. There used to be a pulp mill in Newburgh that burned all of our vintage homes. That closed in October. So I think you're going to see a much deeper decline in our recovery rate starting from now if all these homes are headed to the landfill instead of to that pulp mill where they used to be burned. We can save these materials. We have a great ready market, and you'll hear from some of those salvage experts, and you already have. Most of all, we avoid our hazmat release. And I don't think anybody should be breathing lead or asbestos, certainly not our kids. And no neighbors to these demolition sites should breathe or come into contact with any of these hazardous materials. If you look at Bullseye Glass and the other glass factory in North Portland, no one's paying them not to use arsenic or cadmium in their recipes. For the same reason, I don't think we should have to pay to not breathe the asbestos and the lead issuing from these demolition sites. I believe these costs rest with the people responsible for releasing these hazardous materials. I don't think we can share the costs. I think the costs belong to the people profiting. And I think the costs, if they're added and they don't make affordable housing, I don't think they're making affordable housing. You had Randy Sebastian sitting here before saying the average of homes, the average cost of the homes that he builds are $700,000. In Beaumont-Wilshire, we did a study of 2 years of homes that were demolished, and the replacements were 2.4 times as expensive. So if you want affordable homes, you keep the homes that are there. You don't demolish them. And if you do demolish them, you must deconstruct on your own dime. We've been here a lot in the last year and a half. We're anxious for any measure that prevents the loss in our neighborhoods of quality, old growth, materials, and construction. Homes that were modestly sized that people could age in place in for decades. Homes that sheltered generations of Portlanders, and they can shelter many more. So this is another chance to stem that loss and to Stop Wasting Portland. We hope you'll take it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both. Okay, let's take the next.
Our Doug Lector, Preston Browning, and David Benick. And they will be followed by Jordan, Sarah Badiali, and Natalie Perrin.
Good afternoon. My name is Doug Lichter. I'm a resident of Southeast Portland. I'm also the department manager for deconstruction services of the Rebuilding Center and have been for the past 8 years. We're very excited in this industry to think that that you folks might endorse and pass this resolution. We'd like to think that we can take this tremendous step towards deconstructing the majority of the buildings eventually that come down in this town and make a mark nationwide as having been the first to enact this kind of a policy. One of the things we're really excited about is the opportunities that will be afforded to additional companies to engage in this work. From everything you've heard today, we're going to require a minimum of 25, if not 40, additional participants to deconstruct this, these buildings. And these will be skilled tradespeople who have gone through an apprenticeship program, who know what they're doing, who have OSHA training, who know how to work safely, who know how to work in concert with a team, identify hazardous materials. Currently, if you were to Google deconstruction in Portland, only two firms would come up, both Deconstruction Services of the Rebuilding Center and Lovett Deconstruction. There's room for the growth of additional companies to do this work in this marketplace. We can't accommodate, between the two of us, all the additional houses coming in. So we're very excited at the prospect of a rising tide, as it were, of additional firms who can engage in this, pay their staff living wages, do good work, reclaim these materials for reuse, and encourage you to pass this resolution. So thank you.
You. Welcome.
Hello. My name is Preston Browning. I'm the owner and founder of Salvage Works in North Portland. We're a retailer of reclaimed lumber. I spoke to you some in June, so thank you for having me back, and thank you all for hearing and considering this important resolution. I told you in June that my business was growing, and I had just hired my 10th employee. Well, in less than a year, I've just hired my 13th and 14th employees. I really see this as a huge boon for, you know, a small but a lot of potential for growth industry, a niche, as it were. And I think that there's a real trickle-down effect here for economics and job creation, and maybe it's trickle up because the increased deconstruction, obviously there's jobs there, and then there's increased jobs on the retail of that material, and then the increased in the jobs of the fabrication of people making products from this material. A lot of our customers are fabricators that do specialized work here in Portland, and they're building trade show booths. I'm talking about the 2,000 square foot booths that go to the shoe show in Vegas, that kind of thing, for Nike or Timberland or Danner. They come to us for their materials, and I often can't supply the volume that they need. So I see that this resolution and requirement will really add to, the economics that we're talking about, and there's a real room for sort of an export market for this material. I believe that it is will continue to, and this has been said, but I think it's important that it'll continue to put Portland on the map as a progressive and forward-thinking city. So I strongly encourage you all to pass this resolution. We also encourage the resolution to be passed as is. I understand the desire to salvage more of these houses. I do have concerns about the industry, and I'm Commissioner Fritz. I'm absolutely happy for competition. I think there's a lot of room here for that, and I don't think it will affect my business. But I do have concerns about a glut of that material, and that can, if there is not a value in that material, it will raise the cost of deconstructions that much more, because deconstruction contractors or nonprofits are relying on the income of that. And then also, I would hate to see a deconstruction happen and then that material get tossed away anyway because there wasn't a market for it. So thanks again, and it's great.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you very much. Welcome.
Hello. My name is David Benick, and I'm from Bellingham, Washington, so I'm going to give you another perspective than the local groups. I'm a deconstruction consultant and contractor. I travel all around the United States and Canada performing this work. Now, I've been doing this for 23 years, and seems like 40 years. And I've been to 42 states and 4 provinces, so I get to see what everybody's doing and their different perspectives. And I'm really impressed with everybody here. And actually, you know, we're all, I said, around the country, I've said it before, that people are looking at Portland and they're impressed, you know, with what's happening here and the progressive measures that you're taking to protect your citizens and things like that. So, now, we couldn't wait for an ordinance to be passed, so we just started doing deconstruction. And we, I've done 900 buildings. So, I've also been involved in about 3,000 total projects. So, you know, you don't always have to deconstruct. Like a lot of people were saying here, you know, you might just gut out the building and then use that building. You might want it remodeled, but you don't always have to get rid of it. So, and I've proven that, of course, by doing work in that limited scope. So one of the things we've done was we did it in unsubsidized scenarios where we were doing it under regular market conditions. We didn't have grants from the government. We didn't have volunteers. We didn't have anything helping us out. We were just going kind of toe-to-toe with demolition contractors and winning. To my clients, and I do my training, they kind of look at us as a role model and say, what are you doing, Dave? You know, what do you think about this type of building? What do you think about this project? And if I reject a certain project or a certain type of building, then it's almost like they all are going to follow in that and reject it. So it's really important to me that I push the limits, and that's what I've done in a lot of inner city job training and taking down buildings with lower value, things like that, not just going after the really high value buildings. I think Portland is doing that as well, where you're serving as a role model for other parts of the country, whether you know it or not, because I'm in other parts of the country asking. And so what I'm seeing is that when you do something good here, you make an effort and somebody follows you, then whatever good you've done has then been magnified by whatever good happens in that community, because they are looking to you first, and they're you're the test subject. Maybe if it works for you, then they'll follow you. So that's an important point. One of the other things that we deal with are time and money. You know, people don't want to take; they don't want us to take too much time. They don't want it to cost too much. So we're constantly faced with that issue. We've been able to get projects down to 3 or 4 days, and we've got the cost about similar to demolition. And you could say, well, that's not what we've heard today. Well, wait about 900 projects, and then you'll see that, you know, maybe we could get that down. And one of the trainings we do is to try and accomplish that. So
thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The next three are Jordan, Sarah Battiali, and Natalie Perrin, and they'll be followed by Ben Gates, Luby Wind, and the person who signed up after Luby at the same address.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Mayor Hales, members of the council. My name is Jordan, and I represent Earth Advantage, located at 623 Southwest Oak Street here in Portland. I also serve on the city's deconstruction advisory group. Earth Advantage is a Portland-based nonprofit that works with the building industry to help implement sustainable building practices. Our mission is to advance green building science and create an immediate, practical, and cost-effective path to sustainability and reduction of carbon in the built environment. We've recently partnered with Metro to develop a program that, beginning next month, will provide consultation and material brokerage service to builders and developers in the Metro region with the aim of facilitating greater rates of salvage, of deconstruction and salvage of reusable materials. It's our belief that for a project that requires replacement of an existing building to be truly green, responsible removal of that building and maximum reuse of viable building materials is necessary. Deconstruction provides a path to those outcomes, diverting waste from local landfills, reducing waste of embodied energy and emission of carbon, protecting neighboring properties from dispersal of hazardous materials, and passing quality reusable materials forward into productive use. Deconstruction and salvage can also drive local economic development, as you've heard, creating 6 to 8 jobs for every traditional demolition job, providing a growing salvage material market with the products it needs to thrive, and offering the community affordable options for acquiring quality used materials. Deconstruction allows us to keep our history out of the landfill. I think most of us feel a visceral reaction when we see an older home demolished. And the traditional crunch and dump method of removal feels like insult added to injury. It feels like we're losing something because we are. There's a history and culture in our older buildings, and too often it's literally being thrown away. And while in rare instances concerned neighbors have successfully intervened to keep a threatened home intact, in most cases deconstruction provides the best opportunity to save the irreplaceable material culture that is typically thrown away when older buildings are removed. The resolution before you represents an opportunity for the city to advance a number of stated planning goals and help to level the playing field for builders who have voluntarily chosen to deconstruct. If adopted, Earth Advantage will work to ensure that the growing supply of locally deconstructed materials will find new homes. Thank you for your leadership.
Thank you.
Welcome. Hi. Thank you for having me. My name is Sarah Battialli, and I've been working in deconstruction since 2005. In 2014, I was the board chair for the Building Material Reuse Association, a national membership organization for furthering building material reuse and deconstruction. The Deconstruction Advisory Committee proposal is achievable. We have thousands of unemployed Oregonians, as you've heard, who can be trained in deconstruction, including unemployed veterans already skilled in teamwork, physical labor, and communication that are perfectly poised to learn to safely and efficiently unbuild buildings. We currently have deconstruction training outlets for women and minorities and organizations like Oregon Tradesmen, which you've already heard about. Unemployment resources like WorkSource Oregon are in position to direct people seeking training in deconstruction. The Building Material Reuse Association has a comprehensive deconstruction training curriculum that has been created by national professionals in the field. Building deconstruction is a gateway skill to trades like electrical, plumbing, and construction, and is a foundation for life work, not just employment. Portland has the resources for market growth in salvaged and reclaimed building materials. Since 2011, I have been cataloging news and resources in building material reuse on my website, the Reclamation Administration. There are thousands of posts about businesses spanning all levels of industry using reclaimed materials. Corporations like Starbucks, who now only design cafe interiors with reclaimed materials, to Fender, who just released a series of guitars in old growth wood. There are craftspeople in cottage industries making everything from laptop cases to tiny houses in reclaimed materials. The salvage wood furniture and interior design industry is worth millions in the United States, but also in Japan. The Japanese buy reclaimed wood and architectural salvage from the United States starting on the West Coast. Portland's creative class and entrepreneurs are in a position to make great things with materials saved from our houses. We want those materials, and we don't want to jeopardize our health, safety, and liberty to get at 100-year-old wood from a demolition site. A table made from old-growth wood can feed a craftsperson for a month. Not only can we absorb a glut in the market from reclaimed materials, we can turn it around and produce groundbreaking products. Just give us the chance by passing the deconstruction resolution. Portlanders have always been leaders in sustainability and creativity. The nation and the world looks to us for innovation, and we're on the cusp of making history with this resolution. My sincere thanks for the opportunity to testify and by serving on the Deconstruction Advisory Group. And I wanted to add one more thing. When we talk about health, we often talk about air quality. And one of the things we don't talk about is water quality. We're using clean water to keep emissions from these dust, and we are actually putting clean water on buildings to keep things like lead and asbestos into the groundwater. And there are also other chemicals that come from hosing down buildings, like benzene, which is a derivative of natural gas. And when this stuff doesn't get filtered out, like if the demolition companies are not putting filters in the storm drains, then that water goes right into our water table. So I just wanted to add that one more thing. So thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Natalie Perrin. I'm president of the board of directors at Restore Oregon at 1130 Southwest Morrison Street, number 318. Restore Oregon staff have been on the Deconstruction Advisory Group since its formation a year ago. Through that involvement, we worked with Bureau planning staff and other stakeholders to ensure that historic resources were adequately considered in the drafting of this resolution. While it is Restore Oregon's position that historic resources should be preserved and remain and maintained intact, requiring deconstruction would serve as a small disincentive to removing significant houses from the city's landscape. In fact, this is not a new idea. Since 2002, the zoning code has required that would-be demolishers of historic resources respond in writing to all offers to salvage building elements before demolition. While salvaging historic buildings is never as preferable as preserving them, requiring deconstruction would reduce some of the external costs of teardown in cases where demolition cannot be prevented. While Restore Oregon believes there are many opportunities to expand and strengthen the city's historic preservation program, we support the resolution in front of you as a tool to discourage the demolition of otherwise viable historic resources. And I also wanted to address one other question that Commissioner Fritz had earlier regarding which properties would be included in this resolution. And as I understand it, historic resources are those defined that are on the National Register, local landmarks, conservation landmarks, and the historic resource inventory, either individually or as part of a district, which you had asked earlier about whether or not the conservation properties, if they were contributing to a conservation district, would qualify.
Okay, we'll clarify that. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. And speaking of apprenticeship, thank you for training the excellent new historic resources planner that now is working for the city of
Portland. I wasn't going to mention it, but since you're going to drive that, you are very lucky to have him. He's going to be quite a boon to the city.
Thank you, and our apologies for the theft.
The next okay. three next. Are Ben Gates, Luby Wind, and the person who signed up after Luby at the same address. And they will be followed by Chloe Udale, Jordan Palmieri, and Paul Grove.
Welcome. Good afternoon.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners, for the opportunity to testify in support of the deconstruction resolution. My name is Ben Gates, owner of Urban Patterns, a Portland-based company that provides real estate development services to private and nonprofit owners. I'm also a member of the Deconstruction Advisory Group and a board member of the Rebuilding Center. A substantial number of our clients, landlords, tenants, and owner-occupants, elect to use salvage material in our projects. Recently, a new startup and a local food industry incubator. Now, a lot has been mentioned about the benefits of deconstruction, so I'm going to abbreviate my testimony and don't have to reiterate that. But just wanted to highlight that there is a substantial demand for salvage material, and increasing our deconstruction efforts will have a positive effect in supporting an increased supply in quality, affordable materials that we can repurpose into buildings. We see this demand in our projects. Our clients are asking for it. And in addition, we're excited about the economic growth opportunities. In our work, we look to grow and incubate small businesses, minority-owned, women-owned, emerging small businesses. And also, we look to work with those who provide job training opportunities to low-income communities and local communities. So we're excited about this growth potential. We think that increased deconstruction activity will allow the industry to retool, hire, and train employees, and we know that for every one demolition job, six are created in deconstruction. So again, we can grow businesses that repurpose salvage materials and provide affordable quality materials, and we can also increase the health of our communities by diverting materials often hazardous from the landfill. So thank you for your leadership in pursuing this resolution and the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay? Great. Thank you, Mayor Hales and the council, for the opportunity to speak today and to show our support for this very important resolution. I would like to speak specifically in regards to job creation.
Name in the record, too.
Oh, sorry?
Just put your name in the record, too.
Okay. My name is Luby Wind, and I serve as the employment navigator at Mercy Corps Northwest Reentry Transition Center in Northeast Portland. And I want to speak specifically to the boots on the ground that Sean was talking about earlier. The RTC has been operating for 6 years, and we exist to help individuals released from incarceration to become responsible citizens of society. The work we do along with our community partners serve over 1,000 individuals per year, find and use resources, and we have saved the state of Oregon an estimated $8 for every $1 spent on our services. My job specifically is to advocate for and to assist individuals find employment and keep it. Meaningful employment, which I believe this project will bring, is one in which a worker receives fair livable earnings, benefits, and a connection to a collective purpose. This is a cornerstone of successful reintegration and positive change following a length of incarceration. It is a well-known fact that the ability to engage in work has a strong impact on preventing or reducing recidivism. More than anything, our clients need the opportunity to connect in a workplace in a beneficial and in a meaningful way. Meaningful employment goes much further than what we often hear of as a survival job. The Rebuilding Center's plan, and I believe BPS, is to train and employ workers in the deconstruction of homes. This is not simply a survival job. Careful, safe, and professional deconstruction runs parallel to our clients' efforts in reconstructing their lives. These are sustainable opportunities that offer an integrated learning environment where future carpenters, plumbers, tradespeople, general laborers can learn skills and abilities and prepare them for future careers in the trades. We are really pleased to have the opportunity, if this resolution and ordinance passes, to collaborate with the Rebuilding Center, and who happens to be a second chance employer, and to provide a path to training and employment for job seekers who are in reentry. On a related subject, if I have time, I want to thank the council and the mayor for your leadership on behalf of our hundreds of volunteers and our thousands of clients and our staff for your leadership in passing the Ban the Box ordinance. This went a long way to paving the way to removing the stigma of incarceration or previous incarceration. We now ask you to pass this resolution for the Rebuilding Center and the RTC to create employment opportunities for Anthony here, who will speak next.
Welcome.
Hello, everyone. My name is Anthony Rutherford, and I am a volunteer representing Mercy Corps on deconstruction versus demolition process. I have been working construction for over 10 years and have seen many of the ins and outs of demolition. I became interested in deconstruction because I do remodeling projects, and they call for reusing all materials possible. It only makes sense why destroy what we can recycle. All across our nation, we encourage Americans to recycle just about everything we purchase from our local stores, which includes paper, plastic, and glass. So why not recycle building materials? I've read the extra cost from deconstruction is recouped or surpassed by taking advantages of tax deductions for donating or selling materials saved during this process. Deconstruction also diverts tons of wasted materials from the landfills. Local activists do not have to worry about hazardous materials with deconstruction because proper steps and training are done first. Deconstruction also keeps our environment intact, provides employment, help homeowners, save materials by donating to nonprofit organizations, and the builders get certified training and learn new skills for higher rates of pay. I am one of the underrepresented people here, and I actually struggle from felony background records. And where I'm from, second chance is a real big problem. So our nation suffers from recidivism because our system prosecutes instead of rehabilitates. A steady job provides not just financial resources, but also connections to a new community that can help reduce recidivism. Men and women have the same problems with housing as well. Employment and stable housing is the most effective tool to reduce recidivism, resulting in a safer community and low cost to taxpayers. So give us men and women with past criminal history a chance to return to society and learn how to live and prove to ourselves and our families that we can succeed.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you all.
Next three are Chloe Udale, Jordan Palmieri, and Paul Grove. And then the last three who signed up are Harriet Roth, Jeff Fish, and Gabe Bott.
Okay, come on up. Welcome. Who wants to be first?
I'll go. Hi, my name's Chloe Daly. I've been writing and rewriting my testimony as I've been listening to everyone, hoping to present a slightly new perspective. I'm here to give testimony in support of this resolution as an affordable housing advocate, a fan and neighbor of the Rebuilding Center, and a concerned citizen. Last year, PSU researchers shared the somewhat alarming results of their multi-year study, which revealed Portland's hottest and most polluted areas. They're now hard at work on coming up with solutions. We should all be doing everything within our power to reduce environmental hazards and health risks to our residents, and we should be regulating environmental impact across all industries, whether it's glass manufacturing or property development. The greenest home is the one that already exists, and as we saw earlier, it's also the most affordable home. If we cannot preserve these greener and more affordable homes, we should at least be requiring developers to take the most responsible path to taking them down. The decision to waste energy, increase pollution, and add tons of reusable materials to our landfills shouldn't be a choice. The majority of Portland residents are not benefiting from our development boom. In fact, they are suffering from it in the form of rising rents, displacement, and being locked out of the housing market. Among many other negative impacts, it is unreasonable that we should also collectively suffer the impact of wasteful and hazardous demolition practices. Deconstruction also comes with great community benefit, as we've heard, including more living wage jobs, decreasing demand for new resources, and saving consumers money. These homes often display a level of craftsmanship that is largely lost today, and they are built from timber from old-growth forests that we will not see again in our lifetimes. Short of saving them, deconstruction is the most fitting final tribute to these historic buildings, and reusing these materials is a way to honor and enjoy them for generations to come. I agree with Commissioner Fritz and others who would like to see the range expanded to include homes built in 1930 as quickly as possible, and I would prefer to see developers bear the cost rather than be funded by grants. But this resolution is a step in the right direction. Thank you for the opportunity to give testimony today and for your leadership.
Thank you. Welcome.
Mayor Hales, City Commissioners, my name is Jordan Palmieri, and I work in the Green Building Program at the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. My work focuses on reducing the life cycle environmental impacts of building materials. I'm here today to help highlight the environmental benefits of deconstruction and material reuse. For most building materials, such as lumber, cabinets, light fixtures, windows and doors, the vast majority of the environmental impacts caused by these materials occur during their production, not their disposal. Therefore, the largest environmental benefits of reuse are not avoiding the disposal impacts, but instead avoiding the production of new materials. From a carbon perspective, DEQ research shows that the deconstruction and reuse of materials from a single-family home has a 2 to 3 times increase in carbon reductions compared to demolition. Other environmental impacts to air, water, and land can also be reduced through building material reuse and the subsequent decreased demand for new products. Additionally, it is the policy of the state of Oregon to prioritize material reuse over recycling, composting, and burning for energy recovery and landfilling. Oregon is a leader in the field of materials management, and DEQ's 2050 vision for materials management calls for Oregonians in the year 2050 to produce and use materials responsibly, conserving resources, protecting the environment, and living well. Part of achieving this vision is that when materials are no longer wanted, they are recovered for their next highest and best use. The city's climate action plan commits the city to partnering with DEQ to implement the 2050 vision for materials management. The deconstruction resolution you're considering today is a commendable step to conserving resources, protecting the environment, and living well. Thanks so much for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you. Welcome.
Mayor Hales, members of council, for the record, Paul Grove with the Portland Home Builders. Thank you for the opportunity to provide comment today. I want to start off, and I'm not being trite in saying this, we all want to promote policies and practices that are environmentally friendly and support our sustainable objectives. And frankly, at the HBA, through our sustainability education programs, through our lead-based training programs, we've taken a leadership position on some of these issues in the residential industry. And I think, as was noted in previous testimony, particularly around lead-based paint and other stuff, there are some additional opportunities on this front around enhancement of particular training programs. I wanted to spotlight 3 to 4 issues that were already noted today, and I don't want to belabor the point. The first is the cost, and as previous testimony had noted, the costs do indeed vary, and we heard some folks talk on the low end of what those costs might be. Our infill group, when talking with them, noted that the additional costs were, you know, approximately $8,000 to $10,000. Again, it varies by site, et cetera. I'm not saying anything that council does not know. I think as we move forward in the process and have these discussions, we would ask that we have a conversation around an incentive program to help mitigate those additional costs, recognizing that oftentimes these are passed on to the end user, to the home buyer, and we want to ensure housing affordability. So as we move forward in the process, we would look to have that conversation around what a potential incentive looks like and a potentially sustainable funding source as well on that front, if this is indeed a path that we go down. The second issue that was talked about involved capacity. These are my terms, not those that were used earlier, but I've categorized it as institutional capacity and the workforce component. We talked about the firms, and I think we want to be sure that you know, there's a limited number of firms that are doing this work today. They have acknowledged or they believe that they can assume the additional work, but there is a ramp-up period, and I would echo the comments that would support a feasibility analysis on this front to ensure that there is not a glut, to ensure that we can accommodate the increase in materials that we would realize. The second piece is the workforce piece, and I think there's great opportunity on this front to have a robust and comprehensive workforce development program that provides career pathways along the way. This isn't unique to deconstruction. Our industry is facing a shortage of framers and other workers. We think this is something that is has transitional skills. We'd love to be a partner in the development of a workforce curriculum at the end of the day. This does indeed take time, but I think there's great opportunity to, again, provide those career pathways for folks moving forward. And then the last thing I would highlight is around the timing, and I know that the current resolution notes October 31 implementation date, effective date, if you will. I think it's important that we address and understand these foundational issues first before we move forward with an October 31 implementation date, effective date. The last thing we want to do is move forward with a proposal that isn't completely fleshed out, that haven't fully articulated and addressed the underlying issues, and we don't want to see a proposal move forward that is set up to fail. So with that, thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you.
I have a question. Sure. That 8 to 10,000 number, is that the net cost of deconstruction compared with the cost of tipping and the amount that you get for selling the materials?
It's my understanding that, and I have to get back with you, Commissioner Fritz. I would be remiss if I answered that right now. So let me
follow that, up. Maybe that's a question for staff, but sure. I'd be just be interested. Commissioner Fisher or others have mentioned about recycling. One of the reasons that we recycle a lot is because otherwise we're paying extra for putting more in the garbage. So I'd be interested to know the relative costs.
I'll certainly follow up.
Mayor, can I just ask a question? I know we're running out of time, but, you know, Mr. Grove, you're fairly new in this role, and at least in testifying here, and I would say that I can think of this as the third